Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 421. And tonight, we've got a couple things we're going to talk about. First, we're going to get into the season finale of Mayor of Kingstown Season 2. And then we're going to take a quick look at the second to last episode of Poker Face, because I think there's definitely a few things I want to mention about that one as
yes,
well.
Yes. As usual, it was just wild, the episode was.
Yeah, very much so. Okay, so you just watched the season 2 finale of Mayor of Kingstown for the first time. I actually rewatched it last night as well and took some notes. So there were definitely some cool scenes in that episode.
Yes. One thing I wanted to harp on was the fact that I really respect the show for going the direction it has with Mike and Bunny's relationship, where, you know, it's like Mike manages to get all of the gang leaders arrested as a group and told them that he'll be able to let them out when they manage to establish order in the prison so we don't have all the drive-by shootings in the town afterwards. And this season has made sure to make it clear that Mike broke Bunny by doing that. Broke his trust in the relationship, broke Bunny with the fact that it's like he's going to do anything he can to never go back to that prison again. And just, you know... And I wondered when that happened, I was like, Mike, do you think any of these guys are ever going to be able to trust you again? And that was without the fact that the district attorney decided that he's going to go back on his word with some very dangerous people who can do drive-by shootings, which is exactly what happened to him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's another episode of Nobody Listens to Mike.
Nobody listens to Mike.
In this case, though, it's also an example of Mike. I don't know. This is the first time I've ever seen him do something where... The benefits didn't seem to outweigh the costs.
No, and I felt like there could have been a much better way to get everything established so that it wasn't such of a toss-up whether any of those guys would actually get out, which is exactly what happened. I mean, that seems too risky. I mean, because these guys are hardened criminals, and nobody's just going to be like, oh, sure, now that we've got them safely under lock and key where they can't hurt anybody, we'll just go ahead and let them out.
Yeah, yeah, great. Now, what did you think about any of the scenes that we've had with Milo?
Okay. I was frustrated at the end of the episode because it looked like Milo had gotten taken out, and I was kind of hoping for that because I'm kind of getting tired of him being the big bad who's always five steps ahead of everybody and is also really vindictive and very cruel. I'm just like... It's starting to lose me a little bit with his character. I just want him gone so they can start exploring other things. Because I honestly think the interesting stuff in this entire series is just the ins and outs of an entire town whose only industry is prisons. I think that's more fascinating. There's a lot more you can explore there. Milo is kind of like fantasy level evil bad guy.
Exactly. I think he's better in much smaller doses. Like the little bit we saw of him in the first season, I thought he was intriguing. Now that we've seen more of him, I feel like, yeah, he gets a little less scary and maybe a little more irritating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got to tell you, second to last episode, I was shocked that Iris took out Joseph because Joseph had decided that he was going to go ahead. He was pretending that he was buying her services, but what he was really going to do was have a very long, sustained assault of her to try to prove to her that he was the big bad, and she killed him. And that was kind of satisfying. I was glad to see the back end of him.
Yeah, because he started out kind of cartoonishly evil and then never really got any better. You know, he was just, I'd say he's somebody that you love to hate, but I actually got tired of hating him. So yeah, it's nice that he's not around anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Now, some things I did like was any of the gun battles, especially when it was the one where Mike is at a railroad crossing and some of the white supremacist guys pull up behind him and start shooting. And he takes out all three of them and he manages to do it, like shoots one guy, point blank in the head, drops down, shoots another guy in the foot underneath the car so the guy falls to the ground so then he can shoot him in the head there. And then he's like hiding around one side of the car while the other guy's coming towards him. So he reaches in and he pops the hood and the guy looks down in surprise and that's when Mike takes him out. And I thought, that's great!
Oh, it's fantastic. It was such an impressive battle. I gotta tell you though, what you find out a little bit later, you know, he'd been on this meeting. I think he was arranged to meet with Milo to get him these bonds that have been the subject since season one. Mike was so impressive in that gun battle, but I really feel like season one, Mike wouldn't have forgotten the bonds in the trunk.
That was it when he shows up with all of his friends there because Milo's he's taken his mother hostage in his house, and and he's like gets all the cop buddies there, and then he turns up. He's like, "Oh shit, I forgot the bonds were in the car that he had asked his friend to get rid of because it was so busted up." And I'm like, "Oh, Mike, I was wondering if that was going to happen, because I was like, where did you keep the bonds, Mike? Are you remembering something here?"
Yeah. Now, you've got the hostage situation in the house, but before then, of course, you've got Mike's mom, and we've talked before about how the character just really, a lot of her agency was taken away. So she's sleeping on the couch, and a noise startles her awake. So she kind of like comes to with kind of like, ah, and it's such a like a little old lady, frail, kind of constantly frightened thing. It's not really fun to watch. I have to wonder if this whole arc, in a way, was intentional, that she is just so beaten down by all of the violence that she is no longer the tough person that we saw in season one. It was an intentional change to be like, this violence takes a toll on everybody, and now she is just a scared little old lady.
Yes, because we had that scene where she was talking to, she decided to, I don't know, have a class with some of the people in the juvenile prison, and she was telling them about her life, about how her, you know, husband was killed in a drive-by shooting, and she's lost one of her sons, and the other one served time in prison, everything. And I'm watching this whole thing, and I'm going, oh my God, season one character would have just been so much better, because she's just talking about how she's just decided to be grateful. And I can see that was what the writers were going through, that she was so horrified by the idea that she almost lost both of her remaining sons in this incredibly violent prison riot, and that now she's just kind of like scared and traumatized and everything. But they never gave a really convincing through line on that story. It was just like, she was the badass in the first season, and she was just kind of timid in the second season, and it was really a shame.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the hostage situation. And another gun battle.
Another gun battle. Yep, all bullets flying everywhere. You know, poor Miriam's house getting shot all to shit. And, you know, the crockery smashing and doors getting blown off their hinges and bullets flying everywhere. So, of course, Miriam gets shot.
Yeah. I got to ask you something. So they, of course, managed to get her to the hospital. So they're sitting there and waiting in the waiting room, both Mike and Kyle, and Ian, who's the cop friend, the bald cop friend, he comes to them to tell them what the doctors say Miriam's condition is. I'm like, why did they tell Ian? Both of her next of kin are right there. That was the thing that took me out of the moment. I was like, wait a minute, why is anybody talking to Ian at all?
Well, I'm wondering why anyone is still having anything to do with Ian, and they probably won't if they found out what he did to shut down that whistleblower. Because he took a convict who had done horrible things to an awful lot of people and was obviously unstable, and told him that, like, I'll be able to take you out for an afternoon if you need to go to the dentist. So the guy goes out and eats rocks until his teeth break, and does it without even flinching or even pausing. That's how messed up this guy is. And Ian takes him to the whistleblower's house and tells him he needs to call the district attorney and tell him that he's not going to testify, because otherwise this guy, and he points to him, knows where you live now. And then the whistleblower gets mad at him as they're leaving and starts shouting awful things to them. So the convict kills him. And I'm like, oh, Ian, this could not have gone any worse.
Yeah. In case you're wondering, yes, that storyline does continue in the third season.
It does. So. Okay. Because there are things that didn't continue. Like they dropped that whole thing with Mike killing that entire house full of white supremacists. That wasn't brought up after like the first couple of episodes of the second season.
So nope, I don't think it gets brought up in the third either.
Because you would think if Milo was like this master manipulator, I could really see it as one of those things where he tells Joseph to sell or to give Iris to these guys, knowing how horrible they're going to be to her, knowing that Mike is going to go in and just absolutely lose it and kill all of them. And then Milo has something on Mike and knows that at any time he could say, oh, by the way, I know the person who killed that entire house full of people.
Right.
But
right,
it doesn't ever come up in the third season at all.
Not to my memory. No, I don't think it
missed
does.
Opportunity, yeah. I think. So.
I think so.
Such a shame. But I did think in this season, I liked how Mike would give pep talks to Kyle, because I think their relationship was a little bit more adversarial in season one. But of course, Kyle's like He's obviously still traumatized from the riots. He's traumatized from how badly his job in another city went, where his superior officer gets shot for no reason at a traffic stop by somebody, and then Kyle has to shoot back and kills both of the people who happen to have a baby in the back of the car. I'm just watching this going, oh God, this keeps getting worse.
Just in case you're wondering, though, I was really, it's one of those things where I was thinking that Kyle was going to, like, adopt the kid out of some sense of guilt and everything. Just in case you're wondering, that does not happen.
Well, I was glad that they dropped that, like, a hot potato, because I think he's got enough on his plate with the fact that his wife doesn't trust him to put her and their family first anymore. But Kyle's talking with Mike and wondering about if he's going to be a good dad, and Mike's like, what are you talking about? Of course you are. And Kyle's like, I don't know, raising a kid in this city. And Mike says, yeah, that's fucked up. And long pause. But at least you're not. You're going to be fucking great. And I thought, yes, that's the perfect thing to say.
Yeah, he did a good job there.
But then, you know, Kyle is traumatized because it wasn't just that their mother got shot in a violent gun battle at their house. It was the fact that it was Kyle, one of his bullets ended up getting her. So he's even more traumatized now. But Mike is telling him, you shot him using one of the guns from one of the people that tried to kill me. Nobody's going to trace this to you. We're going to say it was one of Milo's goons because this is not going to define you. And then he's just like hugging him and tells him, and mom's going to wake up and she's going to be fine and you're going to be grounded forever. She's going to kill you. And I love that, because he's just like, Kyle just starts laughing at that point. I'm like, oh, Mike does such a good job with that.
I know. Oh, gosh, what happens after that? Mike is obviously now on the rampage. He is going to friggin' murder Milo.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And manages to make a meeting with Milo at the docks, but he has Ian come with him and act as a sniper off in a distance and tell him, you know, if things start shooting, you need to just take them out, which is kind of exactly what happens. I mean, he gives Milo the bonds. Milo gives Mike Iris. They start walking away. His goons are looking like they're going to start shooting him. And then Milo's boat explodes.
Right.
Kablooey!
Yeah, it was just kind of like, and suddenly explosion, you know? It just kind of... I don't feel like that was telegraphed at all.
No, other than the idea that, you know, Mike and Ian talked with, I guess her name is Titania. She's like the woman who was in charge of the girls at the club where Iris was being forced to work. And she had been sleeping with Joseph, maybe? But I don't know if they ever made that clear. And they talked to her and they convinced her to call up Milo so that they could set up a meeting, and said, you're going to have to run or get out of here because he's going to come after you. And she's like, I have resources too. And I thought for sure that was going to be it. Like, as much as Milo had mob connections, maybe Titania had more, and she arranged that in revenge for Joseph being killed by Iris. No, that isn't what happened, actually.
Yeah, so thoughts on Milo's demise?
Yeah, well, I mean, you see Titania, and she's on the phone and telling him everything, asking him if everything went to plan, and he's saying, yes, I'll be coming back soon. So, yeah, he's still around, of course.
Yeah. There's, once again, season 3, you'll find some more stuff out. So, now, there was also that bit where they were getting Bunny's sort of heir in the prison. Mm-hmm. They were strapping all sorts of stuff to him. It was like their own form of body armor, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, because they went and took out, I think, another one of the white supremacist gang members. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, Bunny's still consolidating power. And I feel bad that he had to leave his friend behind when Bunny finally did get released, because they found like they were good buds. But and then gave him a big electric keyboard so that he could have that in the little private room that they both had. And I'm like, God, I wonder how long they're going to be able to keep that going on, because somebody's going to ask why this one convict gets an electric keyboard and his own private room with a stove and a window. And just, yeah, that sounds like it'd be kind of hard to keep off the books for too long.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so much grift going on all over the place, so you can't really trust anybody.
No. But yeah, I mean, that was the episode ended with another little mini soliloquy by Mike, and I did like this one line about, you know, the town's basically an island surrounded by woods, and they have resources around them that they can't use. So like a lot of islands, they just have to sell whatever they can And places like Hawaii, they sell a dream of, you know, a vacation and sunny beaches. Kingstown has no dream, so it must offer the nightmare. We must sell our failures. And it just comes back to the fact that if you've got an entire town whose only industry is the prisons, then you've got no hope of things actually getting better, because it's better for everybody in charge if things just keep going on the way they are. And that's, we're definitely seeing that with this corporation coming up. And doesn't it seem amazingly fucked up that capitalism has really given us corporations whose business model is prisons? I mean, it seems bad enough to have prisons with so many people being like they're on a pipeline from when they're born in poverty to when they get shuttled off to a prison when they get old enough to be convicted. But to have a corporation like with meetings and business models and PowerPoint slides about the best way to maximize the profits off of these people who have lost their freedom, it's just so messed up.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard about it, but there is a documentary called 13th. It's because the 13th Amendment was what abolished slavery, but there is a portion in there that says you cannot hold people and make them work for no money unless it's the case of prison incarceration. And so the current prison system is the way of having slavery without actually having slavery. And it's, I mean, it's the for-profit prison system. It's just not, it's not a workable solution, because it's too easy for people to put someone in prison because it's making people a lot of money, rather than whether or not they deserve to be in there or if there was some other way to rehabilitate them without putting them into the for-profit prison system. So it's a frustrating documentary. Got nominated for an Oscar a few years ago, but it's really very good.
Yeah, and it's even more disturbing when you have politicians making money off of for-profit prisons, and the politicians are also the ones responsible for writing the laws that people break that will get them sent to prison. So. Yep. Yeah, it's all a big messed up cycle.
Sure is. Well, on a slightly more, if not positive note, certainly more fun note, the second to last episode of Poker Face was the one I had been waiting for a while. That's where Joseph Gordon-Levitt comes in.
And they establish right from the get-go that he's a jerk, that he's a narcissist, because it's like he's in a cabin, he's in a, like, or it's a cabin. Yeah, it's a beautiful cabin. And he's obviously living a life that people would really envy, like his own exercise equipment, beautiful TV, lovely, you know, surroundings, making himself health shakes in the morning, ordering food every night. And they show several cycles of this. And every time someone from Grubhub drops his food off, he waves to the guy and he looks down at his phone and selects the no tip option every single time. And it's just like, boom, there we know. He's a jerk.
Yep. Yeah. In case you're wondering, yes, if you never tip people, I'm so sorry. You're an asshole.
You are.
These guys have really hard jobs and they're not being paid enough. And if you don't want to have to tip people anymore, then you need to support raising their wages a little bit so they don't rely on the friggin' tips. And if you can't afford to give tips, then you cannot afford to eat out and just make your own food. So that's beginning and end. And obviously, this guy could afford to tip people. Come on.
So, I mean, even before you find out more about him, you know he's living the high life and he could actually afford to like do a 15% tip on damn Grubhub at some point. But what you do see at one point is he puts his feet up and he's got a tracking bracelet on it. And the power goes out and it starts beeping. And then he gets a call from his probation officer and tells him it's snowing really hard. It's, you know, knocking out all of the services. So his tracker isn't going to be working. But he tells him, don't do anything stupid. I will be at your house at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning to check on you. So what does he do? He takes his hot rod out for a drive in the snow.
Yep, he certainly does, with his bottle of rum, by the way. And he's slugging away at that, having a good time. Almost hits a deer and manages to avoid it at the last possible second. He's like doing the thing that I always hate when people do, is like taking their eyes off the road to like look behind him. It's like, oh my gosh, that was close. Looked forward, bam, hits somebody.
So he calls up a friend of his, a friend, someone he hasn't spoken to in a while, and says, I hate to ask you this, buddy, but I need to use the spot. So what it is he and his, quote, friend drag the body of whoever it was that they hit into a hollow tree out in the woods under the snow. And that's obviously where they've, I mean, it's a spot for disposing things. You know, there's some history there. And they have a scene inside the house. And there's obviously a lot of bad blood between them, basically for the fact that the friend helped him with something awful 10 years ago, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character never came back, never said hi, never sent a message, nothing. He's off living the high life, and he's been back in town for 6 months on his ankle bracelet, and he still hasn't called.
Yep, yep. Also, side note, his friend is the guy who plays Diego in Umbrella Academy. Yay.
The guest actors on this show have been just great every time.
Fantastic. Okay, so like as usually happens in this show, we have whatever murder happens. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's all established. We know exactly who did what, though there's a lot of missing information in this one. So then we flash over to what our main character, Natasha Lyonne's character, is doing. And she had actually been up in the mountains and bumps into this guy who is just gorgeous. And he's kind of like this hippie granola type guy, but oh my goodness, he is so pretty. And she basically has this wonderful summer fling with him, and you could see as the seasons are changing, she's doing her little like part-time gigs here and there, but she is so into this guy, and he's obviously really into her, and she's like, I am never going to leave the mountains until it gets winter, and she gets hit in the chest with a big splash of slush from a puddle.
Yep, and that's when she decides she has got to get out. But yep, I loved how they set up the whole, you know, relationship between her and the guy, because she's just like looking on a map trying to figure out how to get out, because she does not like the mountains, she doesn't like heights, she doesn't like any of that. Guy comes up and starts a conversation, and he wants to know if he can show her something, and she's just like, oh yeah, I always have to make a plan, never go to the second location. You've heard about that, right? If you're being kidnapped, never go to the second location, and talking about how you got to be careful and you never know what awful things could happen. And the guy takes his shirt off, and she gives him one look at his chest, and she finishes up her spiel with, well, I guess we've all got to go sometime. And then they just march merrily off into the woods.
Yep, 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 yep.
And he's never seen again. I mean, I guess maybe
never.
He moved on, I suppose. And then she's stuck in the mountains in winter when she wasn't really eager to be there in the summertime. So now she's even less eager to be there.
Yeah, and she ends up meeting this woman. It's another like little side character that comes into her life that is so freaking delightful. Obviously, Natasha Lyonne knows that she's lying with every word that comes out of her mouth, but she's also a kleptomaniac, and she's constantly stealing Natasha Lyonne's wallet.
Yeah, if you just ever, the scene will get her interrupted. Charlie's walking away, and she turns around, wallet, and the girl has to chuck the wallet back at her. So yeah, the girl's convinced her that I'll buy you gas if you can get me out of town, and she's using a fake ID. Not a fake ID, she's using a stolen credit card, and I think the person running the convenience store just looks at both of them, and he turns to Charlie and says, if I accept this, will you both leave? And she's like, you will never see us again. So
that's right.
So they're going out of town, and it's snowing harder and harder.
Yeah, and they have, if I remember right, it's the exact same thing. They get this close to hitting a deer, and they end up driving off the road. They don't hit the deer, but they do. And they are completely stuck. They can't go anywhere, and the girl tries to convince Charlie to go ahead and maybe run and go get help and everything, and Charlie's like, you will steal my car if I do that. So the girl is like, fine, I will go. Now, I do love how they did this, because up until that point, the girl goes off to try and get help and never comes back, and Charlie's like, oh God, what's going on? And I'm like, oh crap, the girl got hit by Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, and she's now under a tree.
Because we did see it before the pre-credits thing ended, you saw Diego and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and they hear a thumping at the door, and they open it up, and the body that they dragged into the woods is there at the door, and Charlie's car pulls up. But then you go, you do the flashback to when Charlie was, you know, in the mountains in the summertime.
Yep, because Charlie, of course, gets tired of waiting for the girls, so she gets out of the car, and she starts walking, and she's distracted for a second by seeing a deer in the woods, and it's beautiful. Sometimes I think we had some CGI stuff, which is, you know, of varying degrees of convincing, but I think sometimes we actually had a real deer we were looking at. But of course, she looks forward and there's lights coming at her, and it's coming very fast. And of course, it hits her.
Sir, because
she's the one who got hit by the car.
And Morty, the person that the kleptomaniac pulls up in Charlie's car. And
yes.
Yeah, that was so. I'm pretty sure what happened. They never make this clear, but I'm pretty sure what happened is that Morty said she was going off to get help, and she just walked off a little ways and waited to see when Charlie would get tired of waiting and then leave. And then she got the car out of the drift.
Probably. Yeah, it makes sense. So we don't want to spoil the ending on this one, because it's all kinds of fun and you really should watch it. But I will say it is actually pretty heinous. I mean, Charlie was hit by a car and she definitely has a broken leg, and she's practically hallucinating from that point on and off, and keeps trying to like get herself off the couch, and it doesn't work very well. So she's like legit injured at this point.
Yes. And there were at least a couple of instances in this episode where I just said out loud, "Oh, that's right." So yeah. They play around with perception. They will lead something up and you don't even realize that's what they're doing until it all comes into fruition. And it's just, God, this series is fun the way they play with that.
So
and
fun.
And having it this way, that you know who did the murder, but you're waiting for Charlie to figure it out and then for Charlie to somehow get away before the murderer decides that maybe it'll be easier if she's dead too, and just all of that. So there's like real peril going on, especially with this one. I feel like there was even more peril in this one than there has been in previous ones.
Oh, yeah, she's certainly never been hurt that. Well, she did get shot at one point, that is true. So, yeah, hopefully, I hope they put her on some good antibiotics, man. She's got a huge risk of infection from all the shit she's had done to her body.
God, but I mean, I think one of my favorite lines in this episode, and it wasn't even really so much of a line, it was when Charlie and Marty are leaving town and, like, Charlie's talking to her, like Charlie's wondering if maybe they should have put chains on the tires, and Morty says, no, that's like a scam by Big Auto or something. It's like, what you have to do when you skid is you have to turn into the deer. Just the way she said it, like the deer coming out of nowhere, just made me laugh.
Oh, so fun. And in case you're wondering, yes, Joseph Gordon-Levitt did a great job. I think he looks really good, and it's the first time I've seen him anything new since 2012, so I really need to, like, find more of his stuff and watch it, because he's a solid actor. He's good friends with Rian Johnson, so he's almost always involved in the Rian Johnson's projects, even if it's just doing the voice of the clock on Glass
Onion.
Bong. So fun. And also, from what I heard, I had looked him up, of course, after seeing him in Inception. He was a child actor, but then he stepped away from it so he could finish his college degree, and apparently he invested his money really wisely. So I don't know if he's like, I don't know that you would say he's independently wealthy, but he's comfortable enough that he only does the projects that he has some confidence in. So I think he does really good work.
Which is nice, which is very nice. Mm-hmm. So we will have to, I don't know if we're going to do a recap of the season finale when we watch it, because we might do a watch party. I think that would be really fun if we did that.
Yeah, I think it would be too. Yeah, because apparently Hannah got mom and dad watching a bunch of episodes, and I think they've watched up until not this episode, but the previous episode. Mm-hmm. So if Hannah gets them caught up, then we could all watch it together.
So that would be really fun.
Yeah. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Speaking of movie reviews, so Hugh had a movie review up this week. It was for the new movie Borderlands, a lot of people were very excited about this one. Cate Blanchett's involved. It's a very popular video game property, and the production values look really super splashy, and he gave it an F. And if you know Hugh and know how he tries to give every movie the benefit of the doubt, that stings.
We just watched the latest Red Letter Media video this evening, and they hated it. And their words, they were embarrassed for everybody involved. I mean, they said Cate Blanchett is an amazing actress, but she was just so miscast. I mean, they felt pretty much everybody was miscast in this movie. And the aesthetics, they were just like, I think they even got a very good cinematographer on this movie, like he might have been somebody who worked on Downton Abbey. So like the epitome of class. And it was just basically like, throw some shit around. So it was just, they were not impressed. I don't think they thought any of the jokes landed. They think in a lot of cases, it felt like a bad ripoff of Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, every bit of it, even the trailer to me reminded me of a Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. So yeah, they were not impressed.
Ouch. But if you want to see any more of Hugh's reviews, they are all up at pixelatedgeek.com, including a review of the latest M. Night Shyamalan, which I believe he gave a B, which is not a good sign.
Mm-hmm. So,
and also movie reviews that he actually likes stuff, but all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So next week we should have a Night Vale, I believe.
We will. Yes, indeed.
Yes. Yes. And who knows, maybe between now and then we'll have a watch party for the final episode of Poker Face. And maybe Catherine will start watching some of season 3 Mayor of Kingstown.
I'm going to be doing that. Of course.
Ooh, yes. But one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Pause. We have a siren coming through.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yep. Coming right down this main street. And just past my place, and I've got to wait for it to get out of earshot. Can you hear it on your end?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not when I'm talking, though, which is nice.
No.
I was not distracted. And Charlie is the one who pulls up to the hotel because, of course, I'm pretty sure what happened.
Hang on a second. Pause. Is Charlie the name of the drifter?
Morty is the name of the drifter. Charlie's the name.
Okay. Thank you. So you can, if you start from and Morty.
Okay.
I don't know. Should we spoil the ending? I feel like we
might as well
spoil the end. Oh, well, okay. All right. That sounds good. Pause for a second. I did just get the 10-minute warning. So.
Oh, okay. I think actually maybe we shouldn't spoil the ending. So
okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me think for a second.